Hello and welcome
Hello and
to
welcome, Jesus Christ.
Toxapod, our second take at this, but I think it's worked out now. We've switched back to old reliable.
Jesus. Not just our second take at this, also our second attempt to get it fucking figured out who's doing the intro and both of us failing again.
Twice in a row. Very authentic, I think, don't
Yeah,
you?
fantastic.
How are you, Toby?
I am stressed. I'm still at work. I'm calling you from the lab, which is
Funnily
fun.
enough, yeah, I think we're both a bit in between moments here because I'm in the back of the camper van I've rented for the next week and a half about. So this is a very much on the road in between, keep the consistency clean kind of
Yeah.
episode.
Are
So it's nice
you
that we made
actually on
this.
the road? Are you driving or are you being
No,
driven?
no, no. Although that would be funny too. That's a good point,
Yeah.
actually. But we have arrived here in Barcelona at the time of this taking, and we were at the beach just now. And tomorrow we're going to go into the town, check it out. So yeah, in that
Awesome.
spirit, I've opened a nice San Miguel.
San Miguel.
And I've just been
I
downing
have
these
a cold
puppies.
cup of coffee here. Well, for all the lab rats listening, this lab is an office. I just thought it sounded cooler, so I'm not drinking coffee in the actual lab.
That's a good point. Nice one. Anywho, today's topic, as we move to it, and I think we had announced it on the end of last episode, if I'm not mistaken.
We might
Either
have.
way, for people who didn't hear it, today's topic is Mars. And again, I think from what we learned about clams last time, it's kind of fun to use the word in whatever way you could, like, it kind of gets used. So there's varieties of Mars, things out there. And I came prepared with a nice dad joke, so I'll let you know that one later to end the episode or the topic. But yeah, do you want to jump right into our main topic?
Yeah, so I thought I'd use this opportunity to go to take the opportunity to not really go into what you might think, which is the planet. And I thought I'd talk about. I found it really interesting that Mars is the Roman god of war, right? And how most of the planets in our solar system are named for or after the Roman gods, which are based on the Greek gods, or vice versa, don't quote me, historians. So I always found that really interesting, right? Because you got to wonder where this like naming convention came from. You got to wonder why we chose to also name things like space probes after a mythology that isn't relevant to our modern belief system anymore.
Interesting. Not what I expected immediately off the bat, but cool because in a bunch of stories, regardless of where you look, you often hear the mythology mentioned in one way or another. The first way I actually went, also not the planet way, is to look at the famous Mars bar. And fun fact, the Mars bar was invented by Mars Jr., the son of Mars Sr. So Mars Sr. invented the Milky Way, and then his son was like, "Now we need something like better for the European market," and like redid it and it came out with the Mars bar. So that's like the history of those two bars. And I thought that was kind of funny. I didn't know they came basically from the same family. So that was my first Mars exploration, I guess you could call it. But there's a variety of other ways to go into it, and did you come up with an answer regarding why, like, NASA uses those names a lot? Like the Roman gods?
No.
Called you out. Anywho, so as of right now, another point that I have come to terms with Mars, another fun fact in terms of talking about the actual planet, is it's the second smallest in the universe, which is kind of cool. Only Mercury is smaller, and it's had quite an interesting transformation over the years in terms of what research has found, what we have been able to discover, and the whole way it's changed. It seems to have gone through some like insane shifts that other Earth or planets didn't necessarily have, which I think is very interesting, to be honest.
Well, there's a few ideas, especially about Mars, that, and I say ideas very liberally, because I don't think many of them are more than that. But that essentially the inhabitable zone that the sun provides heat-wise is shrinking as the sun shrinks, and previously, for example, might have held closer to Mars, might have enabled life there a bit better. So kind of the, I think, perhaps some of the considerations of what planets go through are based out of the fact that we just simply don't know enough about the past of our solar system specifically to really make an educated guess about what might have been, what other planets might have gone through, right? I mean, we only see what we were doing, so which makes things like the Mars expedition so interesting to see that they do find remnants of water or things that might hint at geological processes that Earth might have gone through.
100%. Because what's really interesting is that, like, Mars, apparently, if you go, I don't know how many years back, but like a while back, it wasn't dry and cold as it is now, but it was like warm and wet. And that's like the main transformation it's made. So now people, you know, when they talk about finding water, if it's possible to even live on Mars as we continue to destroy our own planet and look for other planets to destroy and settle, Mars is there an option because at some point there was traces of water found either in pictures or imagery or rovers or I don't know what. But essentially that was kind of the myth that people were following. And so, okay, if there's water, then we can probably survive because we'll be able to do all the rest. And you make a valid point in terms of saying like the habitability of the planet and like the total area that would be livable. I think an interesting thought experiment is there. Let's say we fuck up our Earth, right? And it's time to go. And Elon Musk goes, yeah, we're leading the charge. We're moving to Mars. Like, not all the people fit on Mars. It's a significantly smaller place. What would happen, especially with the planet size being like significantly smaller, the actual inhabitable space is even less so. So how would that scenario look? That would be one awkward democracy, I think.
Well, I mean, I reckon a whole chunk of the kind of Musk Mars mission is once you have people on Mars, they're there forever, you know? And if you control Mars, then, you know, they essentially don't have any rights. I think the Mars mission, you know, it's an amicable goal. But I'm not under the illusion that once people are there, they will live there in perfect utopic harmony. I think it'll be a very unfair living situation where there, you know, there is no alternative of life. There is just, you know, you can either live in these places that we've successfully colonized, or you can go out there and immediately die on Mars.
Absolutely. Fully agree. I think it's still based all about power, and there will be a form of anarchy in those levels of stages of civilization evolving. And it will come down to power and who has the most to protect others to get them to fight for you, basically. And that basically leads to anarchy. Then you'll have some tyranny, dictatorships, and then eventually maybe democracy will come around again, or communism. Be cool if it does the whole evolution. But I'm sure it's have you seen Don't Look Up?
No, I haven't.
Okay, it's really funny. It's worth watching. Well, it's also kind of tragic, but it's really funny. It sends the right message. Basically, in the post-credit scene, they the richest and most powerful people, because they've destroyed their Earth, they go to this foreign planet, this mega expensive ship, and only a few people are going. And they get out there, they get frozen, you know, light years later, they get woken up. And then they basically immediately get eaten by the wild species on their new planet that they found. So like they go out, they're around for like 5 minutes and they immediately get demolished because the new habitat is not theirs. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm looking forward to how that will show down. Anyway, that's a lot of how my mindset went when looking around Mars. That's where it kept falling.
Yeah.
Because we have a couple of people who are making headway in that area. Yeah. In
terms of moving, I remember everybody. Reading The Martian. That was adapted as a movie with Matt Damon. I remember reading the book and just kind of, you know, from a perspective of reading it, right? Kind of realizing how incredible, how much work it would be to really colonize an inhospitable planet. And I remember thinking, if we go through all that effort, we might as well try and figure out Earth, which isn't that big of a, yeah. I feel like as a combined species, we'd have the ability to, you know, proactively go against climate change and to kind of save this place still, or to at least enable survival of the next generation that is better than the previous one, rather than sending 100 people to Mars and making them farm potatoes for the rest of their lives in inhospitable surroundings without really many options, which doesn't sound
like fun. And fuck like crazy, right?
Well, I don't think you would, right? Because at the point where you're on Mars, at least at first, until you have infrastructure set up that can support spikes in population, I think it'd be really regulated, like how many kids you can put into it.
I think that depends on how many people actually come. If like only 10 people get there,
I guess it depends on how many people come.
No pun intended. That was not my dad joke of the day.
Come intended.
That's good.
Totally a sex tape.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Depends on how many come. That sounds, oh no, I'm not going to mention it, but it reminds me of something else that I'm not going to mention because it's just disgusting.
Oh,
gotcha. Basically, true stories from Jordan Belfort, the guy who Wolf of Wall Street is based on. And he's like, he's given some more detailed interviews about the kind of crazy partying that like went on that's kind of shown in the movie. And it's so much worse in his mm-hmm. tellings. So yeah, anyway, title of his sex tape, I guess.
Okay. Dude, what are you doing? Oh, you're not gesturing to me. You're trying to figure something out. You're recording. Gotcha. He was waving his fingers at the camera. I was like, oh, what's he trying to say? In other news, we just came out of the triple header for the Formula One. And I'm quite excited to talk about that just because it was pure and utter domination on the Red Bull Verstappen side. And I think the championship at this point is honestly pretty much wrapped up. But the interesting thing is, and Scott and I were texting about this the other day, if you disregard Verstappen in this championship and only look at places 2 through 5 or 6, it's a really close, really interesting championship. I thought that was a really really fun kind of factor to mention, how if this championship was only for second place, we'd be having a great time. And then there's Verstappen 100 something points ahead.
Should he be named Mars Verstappen now?
Because he's the Formula One god of war, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, it's not that far-fetched. Yeah, there's definitely a lot of stuff going on in F1 that's come out in the last couple of days too. Still not to our predictions, but we'll get to that in a bit. Another funny thing I looked up regarding our topic is wild conspiracy theories.
Oh, please.
Because it's always a fun take. Always a fun take. So I landed on this page that had, you know, the craziest like universe theories. And there's a couple about Mars that are just hilarious. The first and obvious one being that there's Martians and that there's more and more evidence of it by weird objects appearing in certain satellite pictures, etc. Mm-hmm. However, this one I thought was more interesting. Apparently, there's already people on Mars. And we have already colonized it. And I thought that was an interesting one. And I was like, man, if people don't believe the moon landing, how do they believe this? Like, this is quite a tough ask to get to Mars. It's like, what, a year traveling there?
It's for sure a long time.
I think it's like 360 days or 64 days to get to Mars. They've done the simulator a few times. Or is it two years? But maybe they did it 2 years for there and back. I'm not quite sure. But yeah, then I don't know. That was an interesting point. And then here's my dad joke. Ready?
Go on.
It's terrible. How do Earth and Mars go out?
How do Earth and Mars go out? All night long?
They plan it.
Hey-o.
It's dad joke level.
I was told today, I said, I, someone was leaving, and I said, "I'll see you." And he said, "No, River, you." I'm so
he
done.
Got you.
I'm good. I don't need any more.
You're cooking up some good jokes in the lab there.
Please,
awesome.
Dad, no, no more.
No more, no more.
No more jokes.
Are there any other Mars topics that you've had on your research paper list?
Well, I was going to talk about how the veins on top of a Mars bar look like the veins on a dick, but I guess we're past that.
Ah, that's a really good point. I've never thought of that.
Yeah. I mean, the funny thing is, right, they're fabricated. You'd think they stem from kind of from the manufacturing process. They were natural, but I reckon they're actually fabricated in that way because they're part of the whole image
mold.
Of it, right? Because you see they're kind of drenched in chocolate from above, and then you see where it drips off at the side. You kind of can tell where the chocolate hardened to. And then
it's probably marketing. They really researched like how people would like their chocolate bars to look.
Yeah,
what makes them the most appetizing.
I reckon it really
crazy.
Was.
Seems a little weird.
I reckon it really was.
So which one looks more like a dick then? A Milky Way, a Snickers, or a Mars?
I reckon Snickers is the worst offender.
I would agree. Yeah, Snickers is the big challenger. Well, and then you got Twix, which is a whole nother experience.
Well, Twix is two dicks, right? That's the whole point.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's single ones too. They sell them like single ones. So it's in competition.
No,
now.
They don't. What?
Mm-hmm.
What's the point?
Snack size. I don't know.
Oh, fuck off.
Less calories. I don't know. And then you have bounties as well. Bounties, they have quite the
They're
thick
fun.
Veins on them. Yeah. Thick veined chocolate bars. That's the title of today's episode.
Chocolate bars. Halloween's around the corner, eh?
Should we go? We could like both get a banana costume and dip it in chocolate.
Did I tell you that I'm going to a party that's like childhood memory themed? And I was thinking of dressing up as my dad, just or like dressing up as a cigarette because my dad used to smoke when I was a kid.
That's kind of deep.
It'd be kind of deep, yeah.
That's you'd get into a lot. It's a conversation breaker, I think, for sure.
Yeah, but like, a really sad one.
People would come up and be like, "Oh, hey, what are you? Oh, I'm a cigarette. Oh, how come? Why is that a childhood memory? It doesn't really fit to the... Oh, yeah, because I have these really dark memories of cigarette smoking."
Exactly.
Get a lot of sympathy,
actually had
I guess.
Huge fight about it when I was a kid. It was really tough, you know.
100%. All right. Sure, well,
dress up as Mr. Nobby. Do you know Mr. Nobby?
Nobby?
Mr. Nobby, yeah.
Not quite sure.
Look him up. Mr. Nobby, Nobby, is this terrifying British mascot. I hope I didn't misspell it now. Oh, Mr. Blobby. Sorry, not Mr. Nobby, Mr. Blobby.
Mr. Nobby also exists.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah,
God,
Mr. Nobby
that's
is,
terrifying.
It's absolutely terrifying. And apparently it gets really angry on screen. So it's like one of those like rage mascots and it'll run around and just wreck stuff.
There's one version of it where you can like see blood and shit running all over it.
Yeah, I don't think that's real from the TV show, but
that's what you should do. Your nightmare
oh, God.
Trauma.
No, please.
Wow. Again. Great job on a podcast to show something so visual.
Oh, yeah. Oh, but anyone can look at Mr. Blobby.
Yeah, if you want to be terrified and have nightmares tonight, check him out.
Yeah.
But on that bombshell, I think, you know, thick vein chocolate bars.
Thick vein chocolate bars. Here, one last funny thing. Did you hear that Azerbaijan and Armenia are almost at war as well? So we're going to lose another Formula One racetrack.
Oh, that's
in
that's
Baku.
Too bad.
Because apparently Azerbaijan is attacking Armenia or thinking about it. Or
but that's,
really
that's next season. That's next season.
It's a next season problem, you know?
Yeah. What a way to look at it. Compartmentalization. From a sports point of view, but that sucks. There's a lot of that shit going on. Same with Taiwan and China.
Yeah.
Yep.
We're going to get a Chinese Grand Prix this year, right? Or next year? this year with Joe, yeah.
Yep, that's going to be cool. And we'll have another one next year, I assume.
Yeah.
I strongly assume. But yeah, getting into Formula One, let's call it here and we'll move on into the next segment.
Gotcha. Go and we're back.
Like nothing happened.
I think I fucked up the transition literally every time we've tried.
That's okay. We're back with F1 Conversation Corner, I guess. Conversation yeah. Street.
Conversation Corner. Conversation Strata.
As you mentioned and hinted at earlier, we are at the end of a triple header and now have a 3-week break before we get back into, I think, Singapore is the next race. Of course, one of the races that was scheduled to take place in this next 3-week gap was the Russian GP that was canceled due to the war, etc. Mm-hmm. But we've come off a triple header that I honestly was hoping was going to be a bit more exciting. Well, in terms of like the season narrative, but Max is okay. Max has used those three races to just stomp everybody telling him he won by luck last year. Like, he is ridiculous. People, I want to point to a record that Sebastian Vettel holds. I'm unsure which year it was, but I think it was 2012. And he finished the year on 9 straight wins. And that is a record that seems to be impossible to like repeat or even break. And another insane season is, I think, Michael Schumacher, he holds the record for most wins in a season, which I think is 13. Well, Max 13, already yeah. has, yeah, Max 11. Has 11 this season, and there's still 6 races to go. And in all, like he could legit challenge all 6 races to win them. And mm-hmm. He's won, I think, 5 races on the jump now, or even 6. Mm-hmm. So he's only a few races away from beating Sebastian's record and being able to like improve upon it, which is just bonkers. He's just been so dominant, so flawless. Mm-hmm. And his last 5 races, they haven't been like pole positions. He's had penalties in, I think, 3 of the races, started from, I don't know, 10th, then from 14th. Monza was 7th, and then he had a couple of 2nd or 3rd place starts. And he's been showing insane dominance, which is cool to see, but I was hoping that Ferrari would come back with a charge, but all they seem to do now is just ask their driver for like, are we doing our job right? That's all they've changed in their strategy. So congrats to Verstappen. He's like, if he just does this now, he's going to be insane. He's going to be one of the legends, because if he just keeps going like this, he has 10 years of this left in him, to be honest. Yeah. And I think what's really, sorry, go ahead.
It was a funny thing. He was asked in an interview recently saying like, oh yeah, are you still going to be doing this when you were 40? And he's like, well, I joined when I was 17. So I'm not planning on staying until I'm 40. And to be fair, he's got plenty of time to break a lot of records. And in the meantime, you know, if the Red Bull continues to be really good, not even like the best car on the grid like it is now, but just continuously offering him an actual chance at the championship, I reckon Verstappen is going to rack him up like crazy. It'd be really nice for him to be a 7-time world champion as well, and then being behind Hamilton because Hamilton achieved it first, just like Hamilton is behind Schumacher because Schumacher achieved it first.
That would be funny. But
yeah,
I think this is where one of the talk, like in terms of Max's long-term future with in Formula One and with Red Bull, because both of them I think are linked. I think there's a legit chance he's not going to leave that team, period. Mm-hmm. And he's going to stay with that team for good. And I think a big thing that depends on that is the new engine rules in 2026. Mm-hmm. And in the last week, it was announced that Porsche and Red Bull, they were planning to partner, Porsche powertrains at least, with Porsche powertrains. That sounds pretty cool, though. But Porsche with Red Bull powertrains, and that fell through. So they canceled that. And what's going to be really challenging for Red Bull is to really be competitive and make a manufacturer level engine. Mm-hmm. Even though they have the facilities, the people, it's still, you know, there's a lot behind it. And who knows what's going to happen. So if they can keep Max happy with a solid car, he can do this for another 7 years, no problem. Maybe he won't win all of them. If Mercedes puts up a good fight next year, Ferrari I don't know. They might win one of the next few. And then Russell may challenge for another one. But apart from that, Verstappen is going to be the main contender for all of them. There's no real person on his level, I honestly don't think. Right now, at least. And Russell maybe, honestly, but I don't think he has. He doesn't have the experience yet. In a few years, yeah, probably, honestly. He's pretty good.
Yeah.
So that's one of the interesting topics that's going on right now in terms of like the next set of big rules coming in 2026.
Yeah. I'm intrigued with the whole engine side of it, right? Because the switch to, yeah, let's put it this way. I've been seeing a lot of people go, oh, well, they'll run out of battery. They'll have half the power. It's like, well, you know, obviously a big part of the equation will be not running out of electric energy then. But then they're also destroying the MGU, they're axing the MGUH, which was there to entice new people into it. Now Porsche might be looking at an entry, at least in a different way. I think we're in for a very interesting time. I reckon any team that's really got their energy storage down will have a big advantage going into 2026. And from at least what I'd imagine, I don't know what's going on behind the scenes, I reckon Mercedes probably has a good shot there. Just because
for that next step, you mean?
For that next step, yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Because
they
nailed it in 2014, so they already had the heads up on the energy storage then, or on the energy side then. That being said, we saw last year that the Mercedes engine was significantly quicker when it's younger, let's put it, whereas the Red Bull wasn't. So maybe, you know, maybe the Mercedes will be better for a portion of the race, but then kind of over a few races will fizzle out. I guess we'll have to find out, but I think it'll be really interesting. One thing I'm a bit annoyed by is that the engines will sound shit again. And I reckon with this, you know, they could have done a lot of things to just make them sound a bit better. Like even be it artificial, who cares?
Fair enough. But is artificial real racing? I don't know. It's part of the sport evolution, right?
Yeah, just make it louder, you know, just do it. Who cares?
They aren't literally loud. They're just high-pitched.
Such a huge section of the fan base is so buttered about the engine sounding shit. And then you have a new engine regulation. Just make them loud. Just make people stop complaining. Jesus Christ.
I guess. Maybe you could engineer the fully sustainable fuel in a way that it like has insanely nice backfire sounds.
Which would be inefficient, yeah.
It doesn't matter. It's like once a lap in front of the grandstand, it just goes boom, 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 boom. And people go, ooh. Yeah, that could be fun and dangerous, but it could be fun. So another interesting thing with Porsche is one of their only moves now to stay in F1, assuming there's 10 teams on the grid in 2026, is to go with Williams, because most others are taken, essentially. And Alfa Romeo is rumored to be partnering with Audi. Although Audi hasn't officially confirmed anything with them yet. They've just confirmed an entry in some way. And it seems that will be the case. If they're, like, Williams would be the other option for Porsche to buy into. Otherwise,
Well, Haas. I was going to think Haas.
Technically, I haven't heard that from, like, reporters' side, but I don't see why not, unless there was, like, some absolute unwillingness to sell that part. But another interesting opportunity would be Audi and Porsche coming together and adding an 11th team to the grid.
That'd be awesome, right? I would love that.
It'd be insane. It'd be so much fun. And they have a huge rivalry, but they've done this before in other sports, so there is precedent.
Yeah. I would love an 11th team. I would really, really like that. I'd prefer it to be Andretti, to be completely honest with you. And then
Andretti Porsche is also an option. Yeah. Andretti Porsche.
Another thought on Haas is, I'm not so sure Gene Haas has been too happy with his investment in Haas over the recent in the Haas F1 team, right, over the recent years. So I could see him just straight up sell the team.
It could be, but I think that's still a couple years away, to be honest.
Well, 2026 is a couple years away.
Well, yeah, he could sell it as of then. Like now already, but he probably still wants to see how they get on with, because they've had a fairly promising season this year, considering the season before that and the season before that. So, you know, they're wobbly, but if the next season is also like this, I think it's worth staying in. They can keep fighting for like sixth and seventh place. Awesome. Do it.
Yeah.
especially on that low of a budget. But maybe partnering is definitely an option. You get a lot more resources, just intangible know-how coming in, and better facilities too. So that's, you don't have to, you could maybe split more from Ferrari and become more independent. And well, I guess you'd join Porsche or Audi, which would make
I was going to say, I reckon they don't want to be independent, at least not if it stays under Gene House. But yeah, it might be worth looking into the opportunity of being bought out by Porsche or partnering with Porsche and letting them handle a lot of the technical development.
Yeah, absolutely. In terms of
fun fact,
go for it.
I was going to say, here's a fun fact that I stumbled across just now. Max Verstappen won 20% of his Formula One races. Of all of his Formula One races, he won 20%.
Is there a percentage for podium finishes?
47.
That's wow. Wow. That's insane. And that shows you the consistency in the last few years, because he had to make up for some bad, first couple of years.
And to be fair, he also DNF'd 20% of his Formula One races.
So he's won as many as he's DNF'd.
Yep.
I mean, Latifi would take that.
Hey, man, I reckon Latifi has probably finished a lot more races than he has, but, you know, that's where his statistic ends. Finished versus races not finished. Well, he's had two races in the points, right?
I think we can agree he has finished, and we will not be seeing him in F1 anymore.
Yeah, I reckon so.
What a great segue to an update on the silly season, as it just continues to get more silly. So I think last time we talked about AlphaTauri wanting Colton Herta, doesn't have a super license, yada, yada, yada. FIA basically has come out and said, we're not going to give it to him. We're very much leaning against not doing that and not looking at our rules, and no, we won't be pushed around. And yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like Gasly to Alpine is a little more in question. So Alpine has now called in Colton Herta, among others, with Mick Schumacher, Jack Doohan, their F2 driver, and I forgot who else. I think there was one more, Vettel, but I don't think that was fully confirmed, right?
It was Doohan, De Vries, Schumacher, and
De Vries, Vettel
is
you.
In speculation. Yeah. You hadn't said him? My bad.
Yeah. So De Vries, which is another thing we have to come to. We had an amazing race in Monza, amazing debut. But basically, Alpine is testing these drivers now, and I think Mick has a really good shot of getting a seat as long as he Gasly doesn't go to Alpine.
Yeah,
I think he legit had as a shot. If he does well on the test, and they'll compare it to Piastri's data in the car already, so they'll have some kind of benchmark. And I think it'll be nice. I think they'd prefer him over Hülkenberg for a year, because not going to get much.
Yeah. So here's the interesting thing, right? Hülkenberg is being really strongly linked to Haas now.
But every few weeks, he's been linked to some other team really strongly. He's been Alpine, because he's driven for every team on the grid. So it's like, why not? Not every team. That was unfair.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing is, it looks like Daniel Ricciardo is more and more close to just taking a year out of the grid and prepping for 2024, which I guess makes sense, because Alpine wouldn't consider him over the other people.
Yeah, there's a lot of contracts running out by the end of next season.
Exactly. So it's probably better maximum to sign a 1 year and then an option for a second, or to have your options open next year. And then to get to the big story of the weekend, I think to kind of the latest on F1, De Vries had to jump in for Alex Albon an hour and a half. He got the call before FP3, I think, or FP2, FP3 on Saturday. That Albon was in hospital for surgery, appendicitis, and had to jump in. And the day before, he had been, by chance, testing the Aston Martin in FP1, which is just really funny. It's rarely happened that people have driven two different teams' cars on the same race weekend.
Yeah.
And I honestly don't know how it's possible, but he did insane. He qualified, he got into Q2, which was solid. He beat Latifi by a mile. He got bumped up because a bunch of people took penalties. And somehow he managed to only lose one position throughout the race. So he did a really good job.
Yeah, I mean,
he was consistent driving.
He was helped by the fact that Alonso and Ricciardo didn't finish the race, but for sure it was still an impressive drive.
Absolutely. Fair enough. Fair enough. But in the DRS trains and everything, and I, after the race, he was like, you know, my shoulders hurt so bad. He needed to get help out of the car. It was tough, but he drove a car without the seat being fitted to him. Like, there was so many extra things. He's never been in a race. He's never really done the start like that before. And it's different to F2. There's so many factors. So it was really cool to see. And I hope he gets a seat, because I've liked him a lot on the F1 show. I feel like that character in F1 more present would be really cool.
Yeah, I reckon so. And I'd prefer to see him with Albon, to be completely honest, than with Ocon, but who cares? As long as he's on the grid.
I agree. He'd be really cool in the Williams. He fits that team vibe, and I think he was their reserve driver this year anyway, right?
Yeah, and you know, he has the connections to Mercedes quite strongly, and Williams is still a Mercedes customer team, even though there is some talk of them maybe switching to Alpine engines. And I just thought, you know, I think it would fit that relationship a lot better. And it would maybe prepare him a bit more to take Hamilton's seat if he leaves in a few years, not next year for sure, not.
Yeah, and the Williams car also kind of hasn't been talked about. In the last few weeks, the Williams has been really strong. It's logged some of the fastest sectors. It's been really fast on the straights. And it's had a better development curve in the last couple months than the Haas. Like, they've just gone down or stagnant, and the Williams has continued improving. And I think that's also because of Albon's input, to be honest.
I reckon.
Red Bull really gave him props for how he worked with them.
Yeah.
And what else is going on in the F1 world? I mean, we're off to Singapore. Max could win the championship there. As you said, if you took him out of it, it'd be really exciting right now.
Yeah.
But it's not. And Max is like 120 points ahead.
Max has to essentially DNF five times, and Leclerc has to win five times to still be anywhere near anything. And that's not going to happen. That, you know, I've been saying that the last few years with Hamilton, it's never going to happen. So
no, Hamilton, Verstappen, they're too good, too calculated. It's like, okay, I'll be third every time now, it doesn't matter, I can finish eighth every time. Like, Leclerc probably isn't gonna get first anyway, it doesn't really matter about him. His team usually cucks up the race somehow.
I'd like to see Russell win a race. I think that'd be really nice.
I agree. A Mercedes win would be nice in general, but having Russell win it would be really cool. With Hamilton on the podium, preferably as well, to do like the almost kind of like the changing of the guard in a way.
Yeah.
Although I think this season is unfair to name it as such, because Hamilton, I think, was a lot more involved with the research and development of the car and testing a bit more awkward things out in the early stages of the season. Another interesting driver pairing gap to mention is Alonso and Ocon. Now, they both didn't score points in Monza, but at the beginning, Alonso had such a bad like luck streak, and eventually the gap was pretty significant because Ocon had just continued getting on the points.
Yeah.
And now the points gap is really close. And
it
I think Alonso, his only goal for the rest of the season is just to like give it to Ocon and beat him.
Yeah.
Which he probably will, to be fair.
I reckon he has a good shot at it. Ocon, I thought, started average, got really good at some point at the same time as Alonso really improved, and has now kind of gone back a bit, at least in Zandvoort and in Monza. I didn't find him too impressive, or at least there wasn't much, much to talk about with him.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. All right.
Well, on that bombshell, that's all the news on F1. Thank you for listening with us again on this lovely Sunday. We will be back in a week. We also have a guest coming on soon, a repeat guest, I guess. Pedro is going to join us on the So Toxic Pod in the near future. So look out for that one as well. And thanks for tuning in.
Yeah, awesome. All right, cheerio. Bye-bye.
Bye.